For more than a decade, Milo Fowler has been an award-winning fine art large format landscape photographer. Milo has assisted thousands of photographers of all levels in photographing his homeland of the Navajo Reservation and the Southwest. Born a couple of miles north of the Navajo Nation capital in Fort Defiance, Arizona, and raised on the reservation south of a photographer's mecca, Page, Arizona, Milo enjoys helping others capture the light. In honor of Milo's work, each of you have received one of Milo's calendars. This gift is made possible by a generous donation from Scott Johnson. Proceeds from the sale of Milo's calendars go to provide electricity to homes on the Navajo reservation. So please accept this gift, but also think about calendars for next year. As you buy Milo's calendars, you are helping to electrify the Navajo reservation. It's a wonderful project. So please join with me in welcoming Milo Fowler.
Yate. Bonjour. Wow, what an honor it is to be here. You know, I really appreciate you turning your heads, and some of you will probably get a neck cramp here in a little bit. But what an honor it is to be here, to be among you. And it's always such a wonderful thing. As Paul had mentioned, I grew up in northern Arizona, heavily involved in the tourism industry. And in a little bit, I'll talk about that. But one of the most fascinating things that I always just enjoyed was the opportunity to interact with people that come from the great four corners of the earth, as we say in Navajo. And I met so many people from just about every nation, and it's just amazing to see them see a little bit of dirt, see a little bit of desert, and see a little bit of rocks. And as a photographer, that's an amazing thing to be amongst, and we live in such a marvelous location. And so, as you see on the screens here, I wrote Dene Bekea and the Mail River. And today I'm going to give you a little visual tour through Navajo land and some stories around water. And in Navajo, we always introduce ourselves by our clans. In any setting, whether you're in Germany, whether you're back home or whatnot, that's how you share your identity. And so I would say Yate She Tobahan Shlo, which is Edgewater clan on my mother's side. Tobahan Shlo Kintle Chitni Bashishin, Do Nakaidene Dashinala E Ado Honorani E Dashiche. Nana Die Hotel E Denen Shle. Shijet Shal Yagi E Myron Fowler. So what I basically said was I am of the Edgewater clan, my mother's clan, born for the Red House clan, which is on my father's side. My maternal grandfather is of the Mexican clan. My paternal grandfather is of the clan of one who walks around. That is how I am a Navajo man. The name that I was given was Myron Fowler, and that was a name given to me by my sweet mother. And so I want to introduce you to my family. My wife is here, and we've got a six-year-old boy. His name is Denali James. His mother's people are from Scandinavia and also from Germany. And so in Navajo, we would say, that's how we say the people that come from the land of Germany. He is 6 years old. Our beautiful daughter, we call Bubblegum. Her real name is Aurora Winter Fowler. Her mother's people are also from Scandinavia and Germany, and she's now 4 years old. And my wonderful wife, her name is Lauren. And she's sitting right there. And so we just recently came back, spending about almost a month in Europe, and we just had a fascinating time there. It was really wonderful. And that is how we are the Fowlers. Okay. And on the Navajo reservation, as Paul had mentioned, I was born in this hospital made out of Navajo sandstone. The foundation exists nowadays because inside the interior is a little bit of lead. Apparently, lead's not good for newborn babies or for anybody that's around that. And so they took the hospital down, but I had a wonderful opportunity to go there with my camera and document a few things before it was taken away. So this is where I was born. I was actually born in that top right-hand window right above the main door there, and I was born there in April. And from there, I my mother remarried, and we moved to a little bit south of Page, a place called Beishagid, which is south of Page by about 20 miles, a place known as Coppermine. And back then, we had no running water, no electricity. And so to get water, you guys just got to reach a little ways there, and you refill it, and you ask for it, and somebody comes back out with it. For us, that meant driving in the town, which was about 25 miles away. And on one February drive when I was 15 years old, I saw two guys in suits. And I'm like, these white guys are lost, right? And so I was driving my 84 Chevy, and I pulled over with my big water barrel in the back, which carries about 400 gallons of water for horses and cows and things we had, chickens, pigs. And I said, hey, where are you guys going? Do you need any help? And they're like, yeah, we're trying to go to Page. I'm like, all right, well, there's only one way you can go to Page, and you're going the right way. I'll see you later. And so I have moved it, and, you know, and they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm like, oh, I'm joking, get in. And that's when I met Elder Ford, and I said, hey, this is a Chevy. You got to watch that name around here. And Elder Landon. And we talked the whole ride about school, about girls, about trucks, about horses, about Navajo life, and not a single thing about what was written on their name badge was discussed at all. But through a miracle, through some of the things that my great-grandmother and grandfather have taught me about prayer, is that you can never be misguided when you really feel it where it counts. And I did. So from there, I served a wonderful mission in the southern part of France. And I was really hoping to go to Mongolia, but some distant cousins over there, apparently. But France is where I went, and I came back home. I came back home at the age of 25. And for some of you who are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and those that aren't, I'm the only member in my entire family. And so it was a little bit tough to share my belief and what I believed in with my mom and dad, and but they came around to it and they supported me, and off I went. A lot of miracles that took place from there, and France was amazing. It was the greatest time of my life because I knew deep down inside what I had experienced. I wanted to talk with every single person I could possibly ever encounter, and I did. I sincerely did, and I sincerely tried. It was the greatest thing, and at the end of it, my mission president said, you better make every train ride home, and you better make every flight home. And I was in tears, and I said, I don't want to go home. And so I came home, and I said, what do I do with my life? I'm old enough to go back to school, start a family, maybe do something in business. There's a bazillion people that come to this little part of Arizona, and from there, I prayed in Navajo, sincerely, as best as I could, and a voice said, pick up a camera, and I'm going to show you some of the greatest light, and through your images, people will know that I am the great creator. And that's exactly what I heard. And I was lost again. I was like, I don't even own a camera. I know nothing about photography. What Navajo knows anything about cameras, right? Doesn't exist. And so I did, and off I went. And this is an exposure of one of the very first time that our son was barely learning to stand. And I've been taking him on the road with me since he was about 4 months old. And it's such a phenomenal thing to be able to pack an SUV full of every possible thing that could go wrong is right behind you. Diapers, cribs, extra diapers, you know, warm water and all these different things. And we just had a phenomenal time. And now My roots are really implanted here, just in the center top part of this photograph, right above in the, what we call the Echo Cliffs. And northern Arizona is phenomenal. There's a lot of Mormon history there, which I'll talk about here shortly. And in regards to water, this exposure here right below is the Pereire River. Pereire is a wonderful name, and when you open your calendar, it'll be the first image you see in January 2020. When the Pereire runs, it is something else to see. It is a beautiful place. Now, my grandmother and grandpa, they always taught to be very grateful for whatever you can. And growing up in the desert, whenever it rains, you just about want to count every drop that you get. And so water is sincerely life out there on the res. And being a photographer really allowed me to branch into documenting these beautiful parts of where we live. And for some of us that may live here, it's just a short stone's throw away. But there's so many people that come from all over the place to visit, you know, some things maybe just right in our backyard. And in the slot canyon business, I got to really enjoy helping people understand what photography is. And this is a little photography workshop that I had with people that had no clue about photography, and I said, we're going to change that dramatically here. So from small groups to big groups, we got to go far into Monument Valley, and that continued to expand and grow, and eventually you meet some masters like Art Wolf. Art's a wonderful guy, and just very kind and very open-minded, and to some of the up-and-coming folks who really want your input on photography, on, you know, the stories of Ansel Adams and the rich history he had among the Navajo Reservation. And so last year, Chris Burkhard invited me to come down to be an advisor to make sure we tell the proper story so that it's just not another one told by somebody that's not Navajo. So I had to give a little bit of correction there, but it came out wonderful. Wherever we go as Navajo, and we're all over the place. There's a common joke that Navajos are like beer cans. They're everywhere. You know? We're everywhere. Whether we're in Prague, whether we're in Hong Kong, here, or on, you know, beautiful peak in the Uintas near 12,000 feet, always remember who you are and where you come from. And for me, a large part of that stems from learning who I am and my identity and my role. And I learned English, your language, probably your language, right around the third grade when I was about 11, 12 years old. I grew up with my grandparents, and language in our culture is critical. It is vital, because through the language, which recently became a written language, and now we've got, you know, some dictionaries, more books, which my younger sister can read and write, but her speaking, she's a lot slower at it. I can do this whole presentation entirely in Navajo and also entirely in French. And language is important, and my paternal grandfather, on my father's side of the family, we had a phenomenal warrior. His name was King Fowler, and he was a Navajo code talker. And so out by Red Lake, you'll find this little mural, and there's Denali looking up to King Fowler, which is what we always did. And our families are huge. You know, my mother grew up with 15 brothers and sisters. My father grew up with 13 brothers and sisters. And you got to know each other pretty well, because those became your best friends. And so the Navajo language is important. And when I became a father, I wondered, how can I pass these important stories on to my kids when technology is something that's going to be a heavy influence in their lifetime? And so the tribe gets creative every now and then. The first movie they translated into, you know, an English-based movie into Navajo was the original Star Wars, the very first one. And so I heard about it. I heard about the audition. I said, you know what? This is for my little boy and this is for my little girl. So I drove all the way to Window Rock, which is about an eight-hour drive from here. I gave it my best shot, and 15 minutes later, they said, we don't need you. And I couldn't believe it. I laughed a little bit, like, you know, because we joke everywhere, right? Navajo, humor is a big part of who we are. Like, whatever, I'll hang out here. And the guy was like, no. And I'm like, okay, this is getting serious now. Like, for real, you don't need me? I just drove, like, 900 miles. And he's like, yeah, I think, you know, thanks for coming. And I'm like, I don't just live down the street. I mean, I live in Salt Lake City. But before I came here, I was in Las Vegas at another conference where I spoke to another audience about this size. And before that, I was in Salt Lake City. I can't just go home like this. And he said, well, that's the story for you. And I drove all the way home, windows rolled down, no music, and I felt like a failure. I felt like somebody that didn't know his own language, which we tremendously value. And I said, the next time that happens, you bet your money I'm going to blow it out of the park, because I can speak it. My young kids aren't around the reservation day in and day out like I was growing up with my grandparents. Any of the food that we had in our home, it became right outside the front door from our cornfields, from the fruit orchard, and many other places. Whatever we ate came out the front door from our gardens that we had. We were farmers. Finding Nemo came up. Disney Pixar's opportunity to say, hey, we're going to do Finding Nemo now. I get a phone call from the museum director, and they said, hey, we're looking for somebody that knows a little bit of surfing, that can speak the language. Can you come down? And I did. And so that was when I had long hair. It was an amazing event. I got to spend the whole day there, more than 15 minutes. Eventually, at the world premiere, they announced that I was, the voice of Crush, the coolest turtle on the planet. So if you go find that, KSL did a huge story about that, and Disney and the tribe, they bought multiple theaters out here where anybody could go watch Finding Nemo in Navajo, and that was a fun thing to be very, very, very involved in. And these are stories that I share with you because all of my grandparents, my great-grandparents, who I grew up with, they're all now in the world of great spirits, as we say in Navajo. So now I turn to those that are still very connected to the old ways. This is Wally Brown. Some of you probably know him. When the Olympics happened here, the council asked the Navajo tribe, said, hey, we're going to do this torch run. Is there anybody that can be a part of it? Because we want to take this torch through the Navajo Reservation, through Monument Valley, and we need somebody there to speak for it. And so Wally represented our people. Came here to Salt Lake City, gave a blessing, gave a prayer. And the March issue of Arizona Highways was entirely all about Navajo land and Navajo people. And these are some of the images that I was able to create that went into the magazine. And I absolutely loved it because I look up to people like Wally now. I look up to people that know the old ways, my mom, my dad. Because once the old ways are gone, how do you get that? Earlier we just talked about the amount of work that's documented under the direction of Elder Snow. We don't have that luxury among Navajo people because our language is a heavily orally spoken language. That's how our stories are transformed. And so one of the fun projects that I really had to do was to take my talent and use it to bless the lives of others. In October, Nissan said, hey, we think you're kind of cool. And I said, okay, whatever that means. And said, hey, we've got this truck that's coming out and nobody's seen it. Motor Trend's the only one that has seen it so far. And we want you to take it and do what you do with it. And I called my dad. I said, hey, Dad, here's the story. And he said, I'll be back from California in 2 days. And this is something we always did. I always will remember my dad every fall and wintertime going outside and getting the truck ready, getting the chainsaws loaded, and going out to find firewood for somebody that can no longer swing an axe. And that was always our elders. And I said, that's the perfect thing to do with this opportunity. And so we did. This is a lady that lives way out in the middle of nowhere. Her husband's name is Joe. And I just remember the moments that I had with her, some small stories that she shared. And so talking about how these calendars that you now have and the proceeds of that will go to light up homes on the Navajo Reservation. Back in 2015, the Gold King mine spill took place, and I was preparing for my largest photography show of the year in Santa Fe, New Mexico. It's a big show. It's where a decent check comes from, and I couldn't really miss that opportunity. But this happened, and my attention completely shifted to wondering, You know, if I can just take a truckload of water down to a family that needs it, you know, at least that family will have water because the San Juan River was contaminated, which is a holy river to a few tribes down there and certainly to our people. With millions of gallons of basically waste going into the river, I built a website overnight and said, hey, if you buy this image, we'll take that money and we'll go buy water. In all, we were able to deliver over 7 semi-trailers full of water. And it was amazing. And so water is a huge part of who we are. I love water. I used to live right in Huntington Beach, right across the street from the beach there, right off of PCH and 17th Street. And anywhere, Lake Powell, there's water. The Colorado River, there's water. Edgewater is my very first clan. And in our culture, we have a story about White Shell Woman, who was one of the prominent women figures in our stories. And when she was young, she had 2 young twin boys. She was having a hard time wondering where she could get support from and love from. And so she left the 4 sacred mountains and crossed the present-day Colorado River, which we call the Male River. And before she left, she said a prayer, gave a blessing, because the Colorado is a holy river, it's the Male River. We believe that within the 4 sacred mountains and within the rivers that we have, we are protected, that we have the opportunity to be blessed. But once you cross it and traverse it, there's no telling. Well, White Shell Woman eventually made it to the shores of the Grand Waters, the Pacific Ocean, and she continued her journey on a rainbow and landed at a place where there was infinite water, where there were rainbows, where there were creatures of all different kinds. And it was a place of harmony. She lived in a place of peace, and she found refuge there. Many of us believe that is present-day Hawaii, because it is said that White Shell Woman always felt the breeze come from within the 4 sacred mountains. And if you go to Hawaii, where does the wind come from, right? It's always coming from east to west, and so is the moisture. She was able to taste it and smell it, and so after many years had passed, she was finally able to return home and with her twin sons, her twin boys, which are another story, the twin warriors, and they flew to the sun to visit their father, and they flew on eagle's wings, and there they wondered, Father, what can we do to protect our people because there's evil around us? They learn how to use speed. They learn how to use lightning. They learn how to use language so they can speak at far distances. When you do a little bit of research about the Navajo code talkers, especially the Purple Hearts and the medallions they all got, on the back of it you'll find the symbolic sandstone painting of the twin warrior story. Because the warriors were communicating at such far distances like our Navajo code talkers did across the Great Pacific. And so, how do we now present this and share this? When I had my daughter, it was a whole different experience. She was born right here, downtown Salt Lake. And I remember she was born at night, and I went outside, and just flakes of snow were coming down. And many years ago, my great-grandmother, who looks like this wonderful Navajo lady here, her name is Grandma Bonnie. She is my sister's biological great-grandmother. And I got a chance to photograph her. She was born inside Canyon de Chelly, and that's where she passed away as well. And she lived to be 102. And my great-grandmother really looked just like her. My great-grandmother in the early 1900s, in the wintertime, it got really cold. This is when it used to snow a lot. I mean, we're talking northern Arizona used to get 4 feet of snow, 6 feet of snow. There's the great blizzards that happened as well, where helicopters were actually dropping hay all over the Navajo reservation, because during the great blizzard, in some areas, we got 10 to 12 feet of snow within 24 hours. Some of those records still stand to this day. My mother was a part of that as a little kid. And so my great-grandmother, in one winter, it got so cold that she went outside to get some firewood, and right above her were beautiful lights, beautiful colors that she had never, ever seen before, but that she had always heard about from her grandparents. And she saw what we would call the northern lights, the aurora borealis. And so I remember hearing that story from her when I was about in preschool in Navajo. She spoke so clearly, and I understood every single word that she said. And when I had Aurora, when we had this baby girl, I said, you know, we're going to name her Aurora Winter, so that there's a connection that she's always going to have to this sacred experience my great-grandmother had, seeing the northern lights. That night she made an offering above her hogan of blue corn mush and a few other things, thanking the people for their distant travel to make a visit to her. And she hoped that their return would be blessed as well. So what we do nowadays to keep the traditional ways alive in a modern time is certainly try our best. We try our best to teach the ones behind us. And this is a wonderful Navajo mother whose husband is half Armenian and gringo. And so she's beautiful. She's wonderful. Natan is her name. She just graduated top of her class down in Phoenix. And there's a lot of opportunities we have in ceremonies wrapped around women and water. And so coming on back to this image here, water is needed for the land. Water is needed for the ceremonies that we have. And anytime we get a drop of water, we're grateful. But when we get a massive monsoon storm, it's amazing. This is my daughter here at our family reunion. A lot of people think this is fake, and I'm like, okay, well, go to our family reunion Facebook page, and you'll see about 400 other photos that everybody else took of this amazing event. And so, you know, water for the future is important, and it's a part of who we are. The Monument Valley area was once a part of the western part of the Rockies until the waters receded, and what was left were these hard portions of it. And there's just such a magnificent amount of light that you can see. And we're so blessed to live in this place here in Utah. And in New Mexico, not too far from Monument Valley, we have Tsebta, which means the rock with wings in English. And this is Shiprock, New Mexico. And Shiprock is where there are a lot of stories. It's said that this is where the Twin Warriors visited as well. And so a little bit north of here is where the Twin Warriors also were established. And it's such an iconic location. And if you ever have a chance to go down there, take some time, go walk around. Not too far from there is also Canyon de Chelly. And Canyon de Chelly has a lot of stories before Major Powell went down on his expedition, before the Mormon pioneers went across Hole in the Rock. There's so many stories that derive from Canyon de Chelly, especially at Spider Rock. That's where, you know, the coming of age stories are shared, and a lot of the details are only given in that in the ceremony for a young girl entering womanhood. And so this is where I really call home, Navajo land. I've been all over the world. I've been to Hong Kong. It's just a fun thing to be able to travel. And as a photographer, I wondered, like, what kind of images could I create so that I can share these stories? And I was in China there, and I was wondering, where do I go from here? And I had an impression that there's no land greater than the land that we have left. In the early 1860s, the Navajo people were captured, assembled, and marched by foot. And here around Lake Powell, there's a canyon called Navajo Canyon. And many of my great-grandparents there, they hid there to hide from the army. And they were never caught. They were never, you know, marched to Fort Sumner all the way in Bosque Redondo in New Mexico. We call that Huelte. We don't talk much about it, but it is a time that we have in our history, and it is a time to recognize the opportunities we have to become better people all around. Now I want to talk a little bit about the Mail River. The Mail River, runs 1,450 miles beginning in the Granby Lake up on the western slopes of the Rockies, and obviously Lake Powell. There's a dam there that holds back some water, a little bathtub, and so the Mail River is pretty important to our people. It's very important to our people, especially for me, because, you know, growing up there in northern Arizona, this was our backyard. So some of you are probably familiar with the Honeymoon Trail. We used to ride our horses on it. We still do ride our horses on that. It's at the base of the Echo Cliffs. On the opposite side of this image is the Vermilion Cliffs. And so this is literally our backyard. And I was talking to my father about a month ago, and I said, "Hey, Dad, how you doing? What's going on?" And he broke down. He didn't cry, but he really took his time to explain what was going on and the way he felt. And he's like, "You know, I just really wanted to go back to my roots and remember some things." And so what he did was he got in his truck, and he drove along the Echo Cliffs and went all the way to Lee's Ferry. Because when he was a young kid, that's where he would go with my great-grandmother. And they would spend multiple days there so that the sheep could drink, you know, good water. And so that the sheep could also, you know, get some really good grass there. And so my dad is an amazing man. I always look up to him. I want to be like him. And his father was a cowboy, hardcore cowboy. I mean, he trained Mustangs. And at one time, we used to have over 30 horses on my father's side of the family. On my mother's side of the family, we used to have about 300 horses. So we grew up around livestock, and they were fun. They were a blast. As kids, we always believed that John Wayne's bullets couldn't kill us. You know, it was just always fun. We pretended so much, but my father remembered these stories, and I remember going on trips with my grandpa, and he would always go to Marble Canyon, is the nearest gas station at the time, and before we crossed the bridge, the old Navajo bridge that's there, he would always pull over, take off his hat, and he would say a prayer. He would always thank the families that are still living nowadays whose ancestors helped build that bridge, because it made it so much easier to cross and traverse the Colorado there. He'd always pray that as we leave Navajo land, our motherland, that we would be protected. And I always wondered why. It's like, "Grandpa, like, the gas station's only 2 more miles after the bridge. Like, it's not, like, what's going on?" But he was so diligent in always having that attitude of prayer for protection, for safety. And that impacted me as a photographer, because these are the stories that I'm so excited to pass down to our son and our daughter and many others as well. And so some of you probably have been to Horseshoe Bend. Raise your hand if you've been to Horseshoe Bend. Look at that. Not too bad. Karen shared a wonderful story where she took a selfie. I'm joking. Right there at the edge. But, you know, Horseshoe Bend is a beautiful place. My wife took this photo of me, and that's me standing on the top right-hand side to give you scale of, you know, how big this bend really, really is. You were just there?
But I wasn't that far.
Yeah. You need a good insurance policy if you're going to do that kind of stuff, young lady. Well, this is the Colorado River. Oh, this is Horseshoe Bend, a portion of the Colorado River from above. And if you were to get down below at river level, this is the very same thing right below you. And the Colorado is an interesting story. People always ask my opinion of what I think about the Colorado River, specifically about the Glen Canyon Dam. I think there's beauty there. We can't win them all. My grandpa always was a great advocate for the future. And his vision was always about understanding why it would be beneficial. And it is down here in these waters that I'm able to find calm waters. You know, whether if I'm going in a kayak there or whether if I see an osprey and I get really lucky and I see it just hovering about, you know, 8 inches above, you know, the Colorado River. Downstream of the Colorado River, we have a supersized version of Horseshoe Bend. And it looks like this, portions of the Grand Canyon. It's amazing out there. What kind of trouble you can get into when seeing these places. And crossing the river, there's a plaque there about Hastri Nez. In Navajo, Nez means somebody that is tall. And so he was the very, very charismatic, very kind, and he would often help people that were crossing the bridge. And there's a very sad and tragic story about him. When one day he was going across in a Model T across the ferry on the Navajo Nation side, traversing back to the opposite side, and the ferry collapsed. It was the greatest devastation that ever happened on that Lee's Ferry there. And after that, the ferry was shut down. And the sad part of this is They never were able to find Hastinez ever again. But they made a great honor to him as far as someone local there that was able to help the people cross the waters. And so the top right image here is what you would find just about early morning there at Lee's Ferry, Colorado River. And then certainly the bottom right photo would be something you would see down below us, where water is life. And one amazing thing about what we call Che is a horned toad, a horny devil, as you may call it. And anytime we see these creatures out in the wilderness, which is incredibly rare, in the last decade I probably have seen two of these as we spend a lot of time out in nature, somewhat off-grid. Whenever we are able to find these, we always say a prayer, because the horned toad, we call it Che, our grandpa, is our direct relationship to the deity for water. So when we find these, we get corn pollen. We place it from on its back, from its nose all the way to its tail, and then we also give it a little bit of water. There are some special songs that are sung and some special prayers that are offered that we have, and we put the horned toad right back in its place, and we continue to pray and move forward with faith that we will be able to have water, because we don't get much of it. To give you a reference, I want you guys to hold up your pinky. This horned toad is probably about half the size of your pinky. But to my grandma and my grandpa, this thing of such a size has a significant opportunity, has a significant role in who we are as people when we go to respect the smallest and the little things. And so I do appreciate speaking in front of you guys here about water, a little bit about Navajo land, a little bit about photography, and it's amazing what can happen when a lot of little things come together. And so you guys all have a calendar, and I hope you take that home. Email me so that every month I can tell you what these mean. But I want you to know that from these little calendars that you have, there will be probably 20 to 30 more homes that will have electricity out on the Navajo Reservation. And it's amazing what happens when somebody pushes a button and they have light for the first time in their life. And that's what I'll be doing again on Monday. We're going to be lighting up about a dozen more homes on the Navajo Reservation. So thank you so much for being members, and thank you so much for listening to me here. And I hope that you'll be able to have a good afternoon.